Rose, Ms. Campbell, Stephanie Wallace. Morning. And Mr. Powers, you have 15 minutes. Do you want to reserve any rebuttal?
Yes, I would like to reserve a little bit of time for rebuttal, about 4 minutes.
How much?
About 4 minutes.
Okay.
I'll try that.
You may proceed.
All right.
May it please the court, I'm McMillan Powers and I represent Stephanie Wallace. We're here on a fairly narrow issue on a possession with intent to distribute marijuana charge. My client was tried in August of last year by Judge Kales without a jury on two charges. One was possession with intent to distribute marijuana in violation of
248. We have 29 smaller bags contained in a larger bag for a total of 14.8 grams.
Half an ounce. One half of an ounce. Factually, the way it was, as you know from the petition and the briefs, there's one bag containing other bags. That's the total weight, and it's not differentiated as to how much is in each of the 29 bags. When she is approached, or when the car is approached, and she's sitting in the front seat, passenger seat, the car's approached, one of the officers comes on the driver's side, two more on the passenger side. When she sees the officers, she does reach out, touches the bag that's apparently on the console between the seats in the front, at which point...
Could you stop just a second? We've got some people coming in. It's a little distracting. I'm sorry.
Sure.
You'll get the time.
That's fine.
Thank
you very much, Your Honor. She touches the bag, she puts her hand on the bag. I believe it's Officer Smith who grabs her hand and then she eventually lets go of the bag.
Let's get to the issue though. The issue is whether there's an intent to distribute.
Is there an intent to distribute?
There's a witness, an expert witness, who is admitted, I think I'm correct on this, without objection.
Absolutely.
And he testified, in his expert opinion, that the number of baggies that were found here, or baggies of marijuana, was inconsistent with personal use. Now, the trial judge apparently accepted that opinion. Why isn't that in and of itself sufficient to support the conviction?
Well, the reason that's not sufficient is when you look at all of the factors that go into PWID, and there are numbers of factors, and the court is well aware of those. Packaging is one of them. That is the only factor that he had.
All of the cases that you cite that deal with the various things that you can consider in determining whether there's an intent to distribute are the factors themselves. Here, we don't even have to look at that because the trial court has the opinion of an expert witness admitted without objection.
His testimony is admitted without...
Let me follow through. So it's not just a question of packaging. It's packaging plus the expert's testimony.
If that's all it takes, then we would never agree to any expert. And that would be...
Well, that's probably where this challenge should. I mean, this seems to me to be a challenge to the basis for the expert's opinion. That this is an objection to there being sufficient facts to support the expert's opinion.
Well,
if that goes to admissibility.
Once it's
admitted, it becomes a matter of weight.
If that is the lesson, then. That will be what we learn from this, that no expert, drug expert, no police officer who testifies as an expert in the distribution, packaging, and sale of drugs in a locality can go unchallenged unless he, and the challenge would then be, you must list all of the factors, you must have all the factors, and that would be our challenge, that every expert would be challenged on that basis, and that would be that you would have every trial being a trial as to his expertise, but also the facts that he sees, and that's not what every trial is going to be about, but that's what it would all devolve to. And if that's what we learn, then that will be what the practice will become in trying drug cases. But I did cite to the court Monroe versus Commonwealth, which cites also Dukes versus Commonwealth. It says that when you have packaging for distribution, you have to have some additional evidence that would then go against the fact that it is purchased that way,
but
simply
Dukes,
for personal consumption.
I didn't see anything that there was an expert witness that testified. Am I missing something?
That an expert?
In Dukes. I didn't see that there was an expert that testified.
No.
So but that was simply quantity without anything further, without any expert testimony.
And just that packaging. If the court is saying to the defense bar here that packaging plus expert testimony, then that's what we will learn. But
see, that's not a new lesson. The cases are replete where the Supreme Court has said that the expert's testimony should not have been admitted because it was not based on sufficient facts. Its premise was not supported. But that's the issue of admissibility as opposed to weight to be given that opinion.
I agree that it goes there and we look only at whether or not the court was abused its discretion in admitting evidence, and we get to a different argument and a different issue. Here, when the judge convicts, he places, and you can see this in what I believe is, I think it's on page 65 of the appendix. When Judge Kales convicts, he says that grabbing the bag and exerting control over it was a key factor in his opinion. And it seems to me that his real weight of his decision goes to the fact that Ms. Wallace is exercising dominion and control over the drugs, which maybe is a factor that you can look at, but that's not a factor that influenced the expert or had anything to do with the rest of the testimony. But that's the factor that it seems that the court really fastened on. And
we're not bound by that, are we? Our review is whether or not the evidence is sufficient to show an intent to distribute.
I agree. But when the judge tells you what one of his key factors is, or his key factor of that exercising control, then when we look at that, is that sufficient? Then you can change the analysis to, is that sufficient? Well, that's just not enough, because you can have control, obviously, over your own personal marijuana. And so we just don't believe that there is enough of a connection between...
I thought that statement was in support of his conclusion that she was in possession of the drug, not whether there was an intent to distribute.
Well, I think when we look at that, when you look at all the factors that he goes through there in the record, he lists several of the things that he's considering, and that becomes, I think, he says when you take this with the other evidence, and what the other evidence is the testimony of the expert, and the fact that you've got what we obviously agree to, the odor of marijuana, the presence of the marijuana, all that, that's all conceded. The simple fact is whether or not all of that put together, including at this point the expert testimony, is that sufficient just to have that packaging? When he says as an expert, that packaging is the only thing that tips me off that this is inconsistent with personal use, is that enough in order to sustain the conviction for PWID? It's very, very narrow on that. And if the court says packaging by an expert, if that's his opinion and that's enough, that will be what the court's opinion is. But it just doesn't seem...
Now, as the defendant stated that a Joseph Moore smoked marijuana in the vehicle, and the defendant further stated that he or she, I forgot which, didn't know whether he was selling the packaged marijuana. She told that to police, didn't she?
She didn't know whether or not he was a dealer. Is that...
Well, the testimony was that and she didn't know if he was selling the packaged marijuana. So isn't that an acknowledgement, or can't you make a reasonable inference from that statement that she knew it was packaged for sale?
You can, you don't have to. I think there's a reasonable inference also that she's saying, this stuff over here in this package, I don't know if he was selling it or not. It can easily mean that. It can mean, I know this is packaged for distribution, but I don't know if he's selling it. I'm not selling it, but I don't know if he's selling it. Or it can be a reasonable explanation or inference or understanding is, I see these things that are little baggies. I don't know if he's selling this packaged up stuff or not. I don't think that you have to come to that conclusion based on, I think, clearly ambiguous statement by her.
You could come to that conclusion. That's a reasonable, is it a reasonable inference? There might be other inferences.
It would be one of several inferences that could be, that you could reach from that statement. Whether or not that is enough to say that she has knowledge that it's packaged for distribution, even if you get to that point, it doesn't necessarily mean that she has it packaged or she's going to distribute it or she's going to sell it.
So we still
have to add that way.
As the reasonable inferences are taken, those most favorable to the party that prevail. It seems, but let me get back to the one that really matters. Seems to me your argument about the expert opinion saying this is not for personal consumption, and you saying, well, yeah, he formed that based on nothing but packaging, and therefore it's invalid. Then what you're doing is, you didn't object to the expert's opinion, his conclusion, which normally you're not allowed to make. You ought to be an expert to do it. You didn't object to that. And now you're attacking the basis on which he arrived at this opinion. But you didn't do that in the trial court.
I can't fix the transcript. Many a time I would like to go back and pencil
I agree with you. Your argument is premised on doing what you don't get to do in an appellate court.
Well, I may not be able to do that, and I will concede that I can't go back and add an objection, you know, 6 months later. But at the point at which we are now, the challenge to the verdict or to the decision of the court is that based on that expert testimony, which is only packaging, that's not sufficient. And that's really what
the expert
argument is.
Had come in without objection and said simply this, in my opinion, this is inconsistent with personal use, with no factual predicates to support that statement, but there was no objection. Would you argue that opinion was insufficient to support a conviction?
I would certainly have I'll be frank, I would have a more difficult time making this as a straight-faced argument to the court.
So do we know that the number of baggies was the only thing he considered?
That's not the only thing he considered, but it's the only thing that he said led him to that statement as his opinion that it was inconsistent with personal use. He did say that, and he was led along by the Commonwealth Attorney very skillfully to list everything and say, no, you'd never do this, you never do this, and also was challenged on cross-examination by defense attorney in saying, but when you get right down to it, the only thing that your opinion is based on is the packaging scheme itself, and he did concede to that, and then there's no other testimony that it's consistent with PWID.
Mr. Powers, you are well into your rebuttal, but because you responded to the court's questions, I'll add a minute.
I'll thank you very much, Your Honor. Okay, thank you.
Ms. Campbell, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Lauren Campbell on behalf of the Commonwealth. This case is pretty a straightforward case, as the defendant recognized, and it's just whether or not the evidence was sufficient to show that the defendant possessed with the intent to distribute. And this court can only overturn if the decision of the trial court was plainly wrong or without evidence to support it. And there clearly was evidence to support the trial court's decision. As this court has recognized, the factors were both the packaging and the expert testimony. Expert testimony is a factor that can be considered, and intent can be proved by intent to distribute can be proven by circumstantial evidence. even possession of a small quantity of drugs, when considered with the circumstantial evidence, can be sufficient to establish intent. And packaging is a method that to be considered. The expert was very adamant that this packaging, in pages 40 to 41 in the appendix, was very adamant that this packaging was completely inconsistent with personal use. It was something you would not see in the city of Portsmouth, someone purchasing it like that. It was incredibly unlikely that the defendant had purchased the drug like this. And he maintained that. And that's where this case is different than Duke's, which the defendant cites. In Duke's, as this court also pointed out, there was no indication that there was expert testimony. In fact, in Duke's, what there was that the court found that it was just as likely the packaging could be for personal use as it could be for not personal use. And that was why Duke's found that the intent to distribute had not been satisfied. But that's not what we have in this case. What we have in this case is that the expert was adamant that the way this was packaged, you wouldn't buy it like this.
The expert said it's possible, essentially, it's possible that one could buy this for personal use, but he's never seen it before.
Yeah, I think, on cross-examination, when he was questioned, he did say, sure, anything's possible, you could buy it like this, I've never seen it like this, is it possible, perhaps, is it probable? He said, no, this is not probable. Again, it was 29 little baggies in overall a big bag, and it's been brought up, the trial court's statement, about her reaching over in the dominion and control. Well, the defendant's statements to the police officer were, oh, I didn't know this marijuana was in there, I wasn't selling it, I don't know if he was selling it. Clearly, the trial court could have found those statements were incredible and pointed out that she reached, actually, when the police officers were coming towards her, she reached over to try to grab these baggies. Clearly, she did know they were in there, or else she wouldn't have been trying to exercise dominion and control over them.
Possession isn't before us, it's only intent, right?
Yes, of course, Your Honor. I was pointing out that when the trial court was making his ruling and pointing out this, he was clearly finding that she did exercise, she was clearly knew that these were there, she was exercising dominion and control over them. He was finding that her state, it was completely up to the province of the fact finder in weighing the statements and the credibility of the witnesses and the experts, and he did that when he made his ruling. And then I also pointed out in brief that this case is very similar to Hassel, which is, of course, an unpublished opinion. But I would just point the court to that again. And the trial court properly ruled based on the testimony, the two factors, both packaging and expert testimony, which was, as this court pointed out, unobjected to, weighed the credibility and determined the defendant's hypothesis of innocence was not reasonable. She was aware of the character and presence and intended to distribute these drugs. And unless the court has any further questions.
Would have any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Campbell.
We got
a few more minutes. Mr. Powers, you have 3 minutes.
Just very briefly, I would say that when we're back on the issue of intent only, intent is still the ultimate conclusion of a gallery or an array of factors. And even if you have the expert testimony, and this is our point, even if you have the expert testimony with the possession and with the packaging, that does not necessarily prove the intent to distribute. You've got an expert who says something and it comes in, as we've established, without objection. That opinion is there. That's one of the factors. The packaging is a factor. There are a half a dozen factors that go into the general case law on possession with intent to distribute. Are two enough? And clearly, we don't believe that the one is enough on packaging alone. When you add the packaging with the expert testimony, does that get you over the hump? I have a sense that the court and I disagree on whether or not that is enough. I'm here to say that I just don't believe that that's enough. You've got to have more than just the way it's packaged, because while the Officer Holly does testify, Detective Holly has testified hundreds of times in Portsmouth, and he's clearly an expert, and he's not going to be challenged as far as his credentials are concerned. It's only going to be a factual thing.
Your argument, really, when you cut right to the chase, is that there has to be some amount, we don't know perhaps what that is, that's a threshold for possession with intent to distribute. Your argument is that, what is this, a half ounce or?
Well, I'm not arguing about a quantum in a weight matter as to half an ounce, because then we'll start having a bright line and that would.
But your argument is that a small quantity can't ever be ever establish intent to distribute
alone. And that's what we have here, alone, a small quantity, less than half an ounce or right at a half an ounce, packaged. Agreeably, it could be packaged in a way that it could be resold, or even as Holly says, it's possible to buy it that way if that's the only way you can get it. If you can only buy it from your dealer or from a dealer, and it is in individual packages within a bag, if you're buying it, you're buying it. And while that may not be the preferred way by a user or preferred way to sell it, nevertheless, it's possible to do it that way. And our position is that that alone is not going to be sufficient to show intent.
All right, thank you. We'll greet counsel and take up Crockett versus Commonwealth.
All right. Thank you very much.